Hello and welcome to Kate Valentine's UFO Show Viewpoints, right here on AM 970 The Apple. And now your host, Kate Valentine.
Hi, good evening. Welcome to Viewpoints. Viewpoints is a UFO show that tries to expand our present understanding of these craft that travel our skies and remain unidentified. Tonight, we're most fortunate to have as our guest Nigel Kerner and Dr. Andrew Silverman, both of whom will be speaking to us from England, and Professor John Biggerstaff from Tennessee. These gentlemen will present a viewpoint that is as alarming as it is different. This viewpoint is covered thoroughly in Mr. Kerner's book, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls. I found this book to be so dense with information and philosophy that this hour will barely be enough time to cover the high points. So, without further ado, let's get started. First, though, let me extend my sincere thanks to you gentlemen in England for being up so early in the morning. This international call is a first for us, very exciting, and also to Professor Biggerstaff for being up so late. So, welcome to the show, then.
Hi.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. And I really found your book to be very interesting, and First of all, we'll just get right into the grays themselves. And what do you believe are their origins? And what do you think their agenda might be? I'd like you, if you could, please, to go over that for our audience.
Yeah, well, you know, it's obviously this is a very enigmatic thing, Kate. Mm-hmm. I came to this by a kind of almost incidental, in a very folksy way, through my son asking me whether UFOs are real. And of course, it took me 30-odd years to give him an answer. And in doing that, I've come to the conclusion they're probably the most powerful and realistic in the sense of a kind of interaction between, you know, our species as humanity with anything that might be out there. You know, I'll give you an illustration. Recently, a senior astronomer at the SETI, S-E-T-I, SETI setup.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think his name is Seth Shostak. I hope I can get that right.
No, that's correct.
A bit of a tongue twister there. He explained that having looked at all this evidence for, what might be termed the grays or something out there coming at us, they've done this for 50 years and they've just got to realize that maybe what is out there, and I'm still trying to answer your question about the grays here, what is out there is so advanced that we ought to look at their communications in a different context altogether from the thing like, you know, call me up or beam me up, Scotty, come back and us and talk to us in a human fashion. He thinks these things are probably millions of years ahead of us and may well be robots and maybe very digital in their kind of way of communicating and so on. So it's extremely, you look at this kind of, as I've done over the years, looked at the principle of the grays, and I think I've come to the conclusion they have, by most people's opinion, that they are really some kind of highly developed intelligence that is roboidal, and by that I mean a biological robot in the machine sense, capable, if you look at the idea that they might be present on this planet, they have to get here past the second law of, the Einsteinian law of E equals MC squared, which means vast distances in no time at all. They'll have to come with huge speeds, that means huge amounts of ability to withstand inertia and so forth. And one cannot see biological life forms in our sense at all being capable of actually arriving in our planet in any kind of this kind of sense. So there must be machine type mechanisms that are designed to withstand vast inertial pressures and so forth in slowing down from speeds way perhaps beyond the speed of light. And that's not to say that I'm trying to actually justify and verify their existence on the.
Well, I think we lost Nigel Kerner for a bit, but what he was saying is the origins of the gray aliens and where they possibly might come from. If anybody's out there has any idea, this would be a really good time to call in. You can call in at our toll-free number of 866-970-9622. Or you can also post a comment on our website, AtlanticCoastUFOs.com/viewpoints. I was just going to bring up another point with Nigel before we lost him. But are you back, Nigel?
Hi there.
Okay. Great. I think people sometimes get lost in the technology of how do you get there from here. And for all we know, there may just simply be, not to say a trick, but just something that we've overlooked. And I don't necessarily think they have to be biologically that different from us. I don't think they'd be here interacting with us if they were. Or at least that would be a thought that I might have had. I don't know what your thoughts on that. The other thing, too, is most of the time they are found in abduction experiences, and a lot of people have discounted the abduction experience, and a lot of people feel that it's very real. I was wondering what your feelings on that were.
Yeah, well, and that's a very interesting one, and takes an awful lot to try to explain, and it has
sure.
to be. Hello.
Yes,
it has
I'm
to
sure.
be done. It has to be done in a kind of deductive fashion. It's actually taken me 3 books to explain the entire thing and connect up the dots. But trying to do it as quickly as possible, I would say that it does fit in with an overall ethos that I've tried to present, where you try to understand what might be in terms of our reality against what might be their reality and their functioning interdisposition with us and the two of us, and how that's related to these abduction scenarios where these things are actually seen. And also there are multiple abductions. People may see other people being abducted, and they may or may not be abducted themselves. These are situations where somebody sees somebody else being abducted and is abducted him or by himself or with other people. And all these kinds of interrelationships are very, very difficult to actually relate in any coherent scenario to the Greys, unless you have an ethos that underlies and connects all those various points together. And actually, that might be something to do with the way we transmit information, for instance, you know, over the ether, so to speak, and how these technologies can actually get themselves into woven, so to speak, between two states of reality, ours, and something that they might be operating on themselves. And this needs a very long explanation. Dr. Sigmund would like to come in on this the point.
Yeah, and just really regarding your question about whether, if the fact that they do interact with people, whether that means that they must have similar biology. Well, I mean, we send out our Mars rovers and our various kinds of robotic things out into space that will search for any kind of life there and would possibly interact with it, whether or not it's sort of closely biologically related to ours or not. I don't see why it's not plausible that that they could still interact even if they were different.
Oh, I'm sure that it is possible, because obviously you have to take the fact that many of these abductions, although they are discounted by a lot of people, I think are quite real, and so they have interacted, and I think we can take that as a given. But I just think that it does seem to indicate that there has to be something in common somewhere, some outlook, some not necessarily biologically common, but I don't know.
If I could come in here
sure,
just briefly.
Please.
In Nigel's book, he actually goes through the fact that it's taken these Greys an awful long time to actually modify us genetically over a long, long period of time. And he's devoted quite a bit of his book to actually explaining that. So even though they are not, or maybe not originally as compatible as they should be, they seem to have influenced us in certain ways and made changes really as an experimental procedure to to try and piggyback on what we are while still retaining the quality that they want from us.
Okay, well, that actually would, so that's possibly, maybe we were so different at that time basically they had to change us a little bit just to be able to interact. It's possible, too. But anyway, that's sort of not really that important. And we were also, someone had just webbed in and was wondering if a lot of people feel that their presence is benevolent, and you don't seem to feel that.
No, in the sense that it is something that might actually alter the existential base of our humanity, and whatever that humanity might be capable of, in as much as they may present a threat based on what we are, we live, we die, we are taught, are we not, that there might be an extension to our particular living age after death.
Nigel,
so
they're going to cut in just for a quick break, and
yes,
please, we'll be right back with you. Again, please contact us on our website, AtlanticCoastUFOs.
We'll be right back with more of Kate Valentine's Viewpoints on AM 970, The Apple. Welcome back to Kate Valentine's Viewpoints on AM 970, The Apple.
Hi, Kate Valentine here. Again, we are honored tonight to have Nigel Koerner, Andrew Silverman, and John Biggerstaff talking about Mr. Koerner's book, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls. We would like you to join in on our conversation, 866-970-9622, or post your comments on our website, AtlanticCoast.com/viewpoints.com. Welcome back to the show. Actually, what I really wanted to ask you was about the title of your book, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls. Souls is sort of an ephemeral type of a word.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What exactly did you mean by that?
It's actually a marketing ploy by the publishers, I have to say. It wasn't the title I suggested. However, there is a very strong connection, and that's the fascinating thing about these grays that my research has kind of, brought up, and that's that they may well have a component that is actually beyond the atomic scale as we understand it. I was talking about this a little earlier, Kate, about the idea that these things, what kind of danger do they present to us?
Yes.
It's just by implication. If you've got a situation where they're quite clearly, up to now, shown to be covert, and in some kind of way always trying to hide their presence on the planet. In fact, they have such vast intelligence, why would they be covert? My point would be that one might be reasonable in assuming that this covertness is based upon the fact that they have some kind of hidden agenda that they don't really want us to know about. Now, a benevolent and a kindred type of being that, shall we say, knew everything and was wonderful and so on, one would expect that kind of entity to come and say, look, here we are, we're all together, we will give you this wonderful benediction we've got for you all, blah, blah, let's all get together and be happy and that kind of thing. But no, the constant series of abduction experiences that we listen to are a parade of horror, of horrendous things actually occurring to people and so on. And one has to say that, let's look at every superior species on this planet has always dominated an inferior species. There's no way that you can say that the consensus is that it's the other way around. I mean, it wasn't too good, as I say, for the native population of America when Columbus got there, if you see what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So, one has to look at this in that kind of comparative sense, I think.
Well, it's
Hello?
True. Yes, I'm here. But what I was thinking while you were saying that was that, again, we're putting our thought processes on these entities, and possibly they're not thinking along those lines at all. Maybe it's just a very dispassionate view of an inferior species, and they just don't feel like speaking to us.
Well, in that case, we have, I think, a lot to worry about, because I think the thing that makes us in any sense kindred with one another, mm-hmm. trying to follow the decent precepts of life and living and the pursuit of what one might call contentment or happiness, is the idea that we have an emotional sense where we can relate to one another and each other's welfare. And in fact, if you have a cold-blooded, neutral outlook, you really have something that doesn't, I think, take into consideration all those important values.
Well, you know, let's say that they did have this dispassionate view toward the humanity. I wonder what their relationship to each other is, or has anyone ever gotten any feeling about that?
Perhaps Andrew can take that on.
Yeah, well, I mean, if we're talking about things which are actually not sentient beings, they're not alive, they're some kind of machine, they don't really have any meaningful relationship in the sense that we would take. And of course, when we're talking about superior good, we mean technologically superior, not in any sense of value. In fact, in value terms, if you compare any kind of machine to a human being, the machine is nothing. But in terms of what it can do to us, it can do terrible things, obviously, in certain instances.
Yeah, and taking this thing a little bit further, if I may, in terms of reference to the soul. Well, I don't know, people have different ideas of what the soul might be. My simple kind of reference that I make to a soul is all to do with information. I say that the best way I can think of looking at a soul is, in fact, a line of derivation we all have, all of us, coming from the past, that somewhere we began on a line of derivation which we bring to the present time. And each individual human being, in fact, follows this particular line. So that whole line of information that comes to each individual, to me, is really best described as a soul. Now, if you can intercept that line with technology or whatever and interpose other information that is not of the individual's free access to make, if you see what I mean, then I think you've got a very important principle here that every single being has to look at. Are these things so powerful that they can actually intercept free will, our will, in making whatever that information line we call a soul is in terms of some benefit to us or not, if you see what I'm trying to say? And that's really something that I think we all have to look at. And it's my thesis, the grace and any physical life that they might reconstitute, say, from DNA codes, can carry something on behalf of their creators and not ours, whoever these creators are that have actually given rise to this robotic mechanism that I think is commonly referred to as grace. Dr. Bickerstaff might have something on it. I don't know.
Okay. I was just wondering what you were referring to when you were saying line of information. I don't really understand that.
Yeah, I think that we individually collect information through our lifetimes.
I'm sorry, that would be an individual line of information.
Yeah, an individual line. It's an individual line. It's not I suppose that if there is a mechanism whereby this line merges past death into, shall we say, something like the collective unconscious that Jung referred to, the psychologist Jung referred to, or some disposition whereby we carry on as in fact, all religions once upon a time believed in this principle, for instance, called reincarnation. A fascinating thing. As a Christian, I'm, of course, you know, somebody splashed some water on me and told me I was a Christian, but I mean, what I'm saying is I have to exclude myself from organized religion and look at the principles underlying these frames of reference we call religion, and looking at it from that point of view, then if there is continuity, this line not only stays and abides in a physical context, in a physical lifetime, it may go on to an extension of some kind, some sort, and return again. And that line then becomes inviolate and eternal. But if that line can be disposed of in the sense of something else interfering with it outside our own control of it, I think we have a problem then, Kate, a big one.
Oh, so what you're saying is that as we, as an individual, go through life and we get this chain of information, that the grays then intercept that chain and take it away from us. Is that what you're trying to say?
And may be able, to, in fact, interpose their psychological contribution to it, despite our own ability to control that or not, if you see what I'm trying to say. It's a question of control, you know.
Controlling what? I'm losing you a little bit there.
Controlling our ability to make those choices individually. To me, an individual is disposed of an individual based on his or her specific choices.
Okay.
And I think if you've got any kind of thing that can get into that, for instance, by some kind of mechanical mechanism or whatever that, or technology that the Greys mm-hmm. might have at their disposal, I find that a really threatening proposition. And we ought to be looking at this much more powerfully than we do.
They intercept an ability to have free will.
Indeed.
Absolutely. Okay. That makes a lot more sense. And thank you.
Nigel's thesis about this continuation beyond life is actually there is plenty of scientific evidence for this based upon, for example, research that's been done on near-death experiences showing that the mind and experience do continue and the brain stops functioning, which has led many scientists who prior to this were skeptical and thought that the mind was just a product of the brain to now believe that actually we're far more than that as human beings and that the mind doesn't need a brain to exist.
Well, that would be quite an interesting thought. Wow. Okay. All right. Well, please hold that thought. We'll be right back. If you have any questions, please call 866-970-9622 or Atlantic Coast UFOs/viewpoints.com.
We'll be right back with more of Kate Valentine's Viewpoints on AM 970, The Apple. Thanks for listening to Kate Valentine's UFO show, Viewpoints, right here on AM 970, The Apple.
Hi, welcome back to Viewpoints. We're really honored tonight to have Nigel Koerner, Andrew Silverman, and John Biggerstaff talking about Mr. Koerner's book, Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls. We'd really appreciate your joining in on this conversation with your questions and your thoughts. You can give us a call right now at 866-970-9622 or post your questions on our website, AtlanticCoastUFOs/viewpoints.com. We seem to be getting a little echo there, too. Perhaps your speakers are somewhat loud over there in England.
There
you are. Okay, good enough.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, basically this is a UFO show, and we are interested in visitors from, I guess, almost in a Star Trek sense, like other planets. And you posit that these people are not at all like that, that these are almost... describe them as being in between atoms, almost like that space in between atoms, which
That's
is
right.
an interesting concept. I did read your book. I tried to grasp it, but I don't really understand what you meant by that.
Yes, well, it's kind of expression of how one might access another reality that is not ours. You see, ours is full of. Ours is full of kind of force. Everything about the universe is to do with ways of translating force itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I propose that if you want something completely different from that, because you've got a plus or a minus, you know, everything has got its opposite sort of thing, maybe that the world that the great teachers, for instance, religious teachers, for instance, were talking about is a world of knowing and understanding in complete union, completely different from our world, which is breaking down. You see, with the second law of thermodynamics, everything is going to be unraveled, so the cosmologists tell us now.
Mm-hmm.
And if that means anything, it means that one day everything will end. Everything is finite. But then these great teachers said there is an eternal scale of existence, and one looks at what this might be. And, of course, the only place you will get no force in this universe are the points of balance where forces are all juxtaposed, and that would be the very center of for want of a better description, the space between atoms. Atoms make force, whereas the space between them would have a zero point of force. And I believe that these are the access routes that takes perhaps our individual information systems into this particular disposition, and then there it is not threatened by any kind of forceful breakup as our universe is, that we are in fact in another universe, which, for want of a better way, one might describe, and I don't like the word God because it smells too or it spells too much anthropomorphic types of outlook of some old man up there like us, you know, moving around and so on. I think it is an implicate kind of situation whereby there is a wonderful sense of union at this point where there is no force. And I think what the Greys can't do, Kate, is this. They cannot access or know, because they are a compound artificial intelligence like any machine would be. I mean, you know, it's, they're kind of glorified Hoover, maybe, or if you see what I'm trying to say. And within their scale of reference, they're just simply kind of super, super quantum computers, if you like. And they're looking at us more as a curiosity. How can these guys kind of do what they do? They have natural birth. They can think they are strange. But if we modify them in such a way that they become more like a machine, maybe we can then hitch our minds into their capacity for reaching this place that they go to where there is no force. And there they can persist without being broken down themselves, because they, being machines, are also bound by the second law of thermodynamics, which breaks everything up. So you see, the whole thing about this is, in the book I try to weave an intricate connecting up the dots thing to give you a whole compendium of what it might be like. Of course, I can't know if this is true or not. One does make an attempt to be as neutral and as analytical as possible in trying to provide a scale for other people to look at and perhaps come out with some answers outside the tooth fairy and all that kind of business, if you see what I mean.
So in essence, these people are, or the Greys are actually then trying to become immortal by becoming mortal, you're almost saying.
In fact, in a way, we don't know how powerfully immortal we are. And I think great teachers try to tell us there is another world that might be called the Godverse, for instance, whereby where we go on to, if our scale of reference is suitable, we go and we are not then amenable to destruction there. But if we keep if reincarnation is true, and this is where I think they may have a case for this reincarnation business. If it is true, then we keep going and coming back until some situation arises whereby knowledge itself, they say, frees. Knowledge then takes us beyond the scale of physical danger within a physical universe like ours, where things break down. And I think the Grey, the machines themselves, are looking at the proposition that maybe their own stature to be there, so to speak, you know, to exist, so to speak, in their own terms, that has to be seen to such that they can, in fact, borrow our eternal capacity to go and come back, so to speak, into this frame of reference I call the point, the space between atoms, which is, in fact, a gateway to another, shall we say, exposition of existence, if you like, you know. I'm sorry to pick the words like this, but one has to be guarded against being too specific, or else, you know, you get a whole compendium of people throwing all kinds of things at you and so on. So it's a difficult thing.
Well, as I warned the audience before we started, your book is so dense and it's so full of philosophy that just to ask you a question like, gee, what do you mean by harvesting of souls, and then expect you to answer it in 5 minutes is just not going to happen. They really need to read the book to get the whole viewpoint. But so now when these entities or whatever do intercept our line of information, is that harmful to a human, or can we share it with them?
Well, if they had such a thing, you know, we have this thing called conscience, do we not?
Mm-hmm.
If it's possible for a machine to have a conscience, then one would say maybe we could rely on that. But you see, a machine has no such thing. It is a created business of this universe alone. We came in with the universe. That's the grandeur of every single human being, that we came in with the universe on this derivational line I call a soul. And we shall be traveling on that line, each of our individualities, forever, so to speak. Now, these beings, or these things, or these greys, or whatever technology, as we create robots now in our own terms on this planet, we're doing that and sending them out all the time. Can you imagine a civilization maybe a million years ahead of us, as Dr. Kaku presumes, you know, the famous physicist Dr. Kaku, Michio Kaku, I think his name is, he presumes that there are civilizations so far ahead that they make robots that are so sophisticated that the greys would be perhaps simple compared to that. And so we've got to look out that we guard the most wonderful facility that every single human being, I believe, has, this capacity to go in and out of universes and exist forever. And I think the great teachers saw this danger many, many yonks ago, so to speak, and came to warn us to take care of this thing. There are certain rules of the game, so to speak, and maybe that's what got converted to organized religion. And of course, we've got all the, you know, the various troubles and so on based upon our tribalism to do with that and so on. And it's very sad because we are so special in our individualities, each and every single one of us.
Did you ever have like a really bad suspicion that possibly we were originally robots and that these souls that were harvested were put into what we now call humans? Did you think it might work it in reverse?
It's a very good question, Kate. The point is, I do not think that these guys have the premise, because they're robots, of ever truly understanding our difference. And that is our great advantage. They do not know what it is to think or be like naturally living beings, so to speak. And that is the great thing that we have that they do not have. But, of course, as machines, they will be programmed to search the furthest edge, so to speak, to find out all capacities. If, in fact, they are some kind of, you know, self-propagating entity that breaks down from time to time, perhaps they have biological DNA making them up. And maybe they want our DNA as replacement DNA for their own. Who knows? Because they're hiding, we don't know. Dr. Silverman wants to come in on this.
Yeah. When you say if perhaps we were once robots, of course we have to define what we mean by we. And in human terms, when we're talking about what we are, we're generally referring to our experiences, our minds, and so on. Now, the point about it is that if, as science has provided evidence to be the case, the mind doesn't need a brain to exist, and we don't end when we die, and it didn't begin even when we were conceived, then that mind could never have been something that was not a mind, if you like. You can't actually create something out of a machine, however complicated it is. It's still, as Nigel says, it's just a glorified Hoover. It's not anything that's living.
Yeah, but I think there was some idea that the aliens or the greys had some genetic interception with humans at one point. That they possibly that some genetic material, we had received genetic material from them.
But I don't think the suggestion is that our ability to know, our consciousness and our minds would be the result of such interception, that a machine would interact with another machine to make it know something. Something that I would like to talk about at some stage, if possible, is further scientific evidence for the continuation of the human existence beyond death, that is provided by a very special object. Well, to me, I believe it's very special, which is known as the Turin Shroud.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that connects up beautifully with the ethos that I try to put in the two books. I've written a third one, but that has to come later, underlining all these, putting all these things together, even more coherently, I hope. But the incredible thing is that in looking at this journey that I started just to answer my son's question, are UFOs real, Dad? In 30 years, and as we joined up the dots and uncovered more and more evidence, it's completely flipped my cynicism and skepticism about UFOs and all the rest of it, and brought in an incredibly comprehensive ethos that involves the measures we talk about, Andrew's talking about, where this business of some impression on a piece of cloth in Turin is causing the most amazing kind of, you know...
Great. I tell you, hold that thought, because they're going to interrupt.
We'll be right back with more of Kate Valentine's Viewpoints on AM 970, The Apple. Welcome back to Kate Valentine's Viewpoints on AM 970, The Apple.
Hi, Kate Valentine here with Nigel Kerner, Andrew Silverman, and John Biggerstaff. If you have any questions, please call in 866-970-9622. You can always post questions on our website, AtlanticCoastUFO/viewpoints.com. Dr. Silverman, just before we left for break, you were starting to talk about the Shroud of Turin. And what connection would that have with gray aliens, UFOs? I read about it in the book. I thought it was quite fascinating, and perhaps you could share that with our audience.
Certainly. Well, for me, it's a fascinating piece of cloth, which has been shown by forensic scientists and so on who have studied it to almost certainly fit with the historical person that we know as Jesus or Yeshua ben Yosef. I have to say at the outset that I don't want anyone to think that this is a religious thing that I'm talking about this. I might say an introduction about myself. I actually come from a Jewish background, so I have no sort of vested interest to want to prove its veracity or so on. But it's just impossible for me, not in, for many other scientists who have studied it, to not be completely awed by this object. If I just say a little bit about it for those who aren't aware of it, it's a piece of cloth that holds on it an imprint of a man in what was discovered around the end of the 19th century, but when the photography was first developed, to actually be a photographic negative imprint that's only on the surface fibers of the cloth, which holds distance-coded and holographic information on it. And it's a thing that we cannot duplicate, even with our 21st century technology. And it has huge amounts of information on it that have been confirmed as being true by, as I say, forensic pathologists, anatomists, and so on. And the only theory which the scientists who are studying the cloth can come up with of how the image could possibly have been formed that actually fits and makes sense is that it was actually the result of a short, intense burst of radiation, radiant energy, if you like, from the body of a man that was dead. Okay, so that this dead body actually shone brighter than the sun for a fraction of a second, so small that it's less than a millionth of a second, and actually changed the surface fibers of the cloth. And how does that happen? How does a dead body shine brighter than the sun? Now, the clue may be in many ways of who was the person that it wrapped, because it's this most unique object in our artifact in our history as mankind is just happens to be associated with the one person whose life was unique in how he lived it and how he taught. Now the greys, if they're material physical artifacts, they're not capable of actually being aware of having minds and so on, and they're just part of what Nigel describes as the second law of thermodynamics, that everything will naturally break apart. But as human beings, if we have minds and we have something that isn't subject to that. And scientists who study the nature of time have said that time happens because of the conscious experience of the moment, of now. That's what makes the time, rather than the past, present, and future being everywhere all at once. Now, if we're actually able to make time, we can't actually begin or end. Now, the point about this is that if you look at what this particular individual taught and how he lived, he always spoke about when he was asked what's the most important thing for people to understand and follow, he spoke about this one saying, to love your neighbor as yourself, which is not asking people to be goody-goody and so on. It's just talking about the fact that the universe's momentum through the separation and breakdown is that everything falls apart, everything divides, but that actually as human beings, as anything with a mind, then what makes us have a mind is the fact that we have awareness and we have the ability to choose. Now, the only differences between individual people is what we're aware of and what we choose. So if you like Nigel's, what he was talking about lines of information, but the actual, what that information is encoded on would have to be the same in all of us, because we all have awareness and we all have choice.
And you're saying that this information was somehow transmitted to this piece of cloth? Is that it?
What I'm saying is that something happened to the atoms of this dead body.
Okay.
That actually, it's been shown that when the image was formed, that he was actually vertical. He'd actually, the body came up off the slab. This is based on forensic studies of the image, that the hair wasn't back as it should have been. It was on, if he was lying flat, it was on the various things, it was on the shoulders and so on, that implied that he was actually vertical, that actually a dead body became vertical and shone brighter than the sun. It sort of provides evidence that perhaps that dead body was coming back to life, that actually shows that the mind had actually continued beyond the physical death of the body and was actually able to transform the atoms, actually changing matter into light. Now, Nigel's thesis in the book is that there's actually a continuum, that matter and the mind, that we see them as actually two completely separate things, but actually, rather, and generally the common sense or consensus view that most people have is that the brain makes the mind, or the arrangements of atoms make the mind, but things that have been studied in quantum theory and so on have shown that actually it's the other way around, that the mind, the observer, is what makes the physical reality real, rather than our brains making us. And the point about what he had achieved by forming that image is he's shown that actually by living your life in a certain way, you may actually be able to change the very atoms of the body, and that perhaps that what we've done, if we didn't begin when we were born and go right back to the beginning of the universe, and at the universe everything was one, the beginning of the universe, this is what science teaches about the singularity of the Big Bang, then that means we were all one once, and now we've become separate. And the way becoming separate makes us restricted, and restriction shows itself in many ways that we can see in life through racism and so on.
Right. And so actually what you're saying is that possibly that the Shroud of Turin was a physical example of eternal life, which, of course, is the Christian message.
Absolutely, Kate. You got it in one. Wonderful. And also the wonderful thing about this is that there's a thing in the Bible which says that, that this man was taken up to a high place and was shown the cities of the world. There's only one place that you can be shown the cities of the world, and that is from space.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another thing that alludes to this, where Jesus takes on these I believe, the greys, when he says, "Get thee behind me, Satan, for it is written that thou shalt be," putting them where they ought to be, and that Christ, in fact, came, I believe, to warn us about this great threat.
Oh, no, Nigel, I'm afraid our time is coming. Oh, no, we're running out of time here. Thank you so much for being with us, especially as such an early hour. Really appreciate it.
Not at all. Thank you very
audience,
much.
Audience, please don't forget his books, Gray Aliens, The Harvesting of Souls. The Song of the Grays is another book, and I understand there's another one coming
out. Thanks for listening to Kate Valentine's UFO Show Viewpoints. Hear it at this same time every week on AM 970, The Apple.